Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earle, joined by Alex Ord. Now there is some tangible evidence to the whole Belichick to the Falcons rumors. He has been interviewed by the Falcons. I think that's the only interview, at least to our knowledge, that has actually been conducted, which, first of all, I want to talk about just the interview process with Belichick. What's that like? You know, he's like, well, what does he come in and say? Obviously, he has to say some stuff about his plan for how he wants to go about things with the Falcons, but he's also like, hey, I'm Bill Belichick. Like, you know what you're getting. I'm one of the greatest defensive minds of all time. I think really the main points of that entire interview process have to basically be like, hey, personnel decisions, that's obviously going to be a big talking point. And it, from the Falcons perspective, the direction we go in quarterback. I mean, is there really anything else that he has to say? And maybe the Rich McKay thing that we talked about yesterday, like, is he still going to be around in Arthur Blank's ear if he takes this job?
Yeah, I think, you know, I hadn't really thought about this until you just mentioned it, but like Belichick had what, like a few days to formulate a plan for what he thinks is best for the Atlanta Falcons. There's no possible way he formed a thorough, you know, plan for the Atlanta Falcons franchise in just a few days. I mean, because he's wrapping up tying Alf loose ends in New England, and then he's also trying to prepare his resume, fire up his resume again. Obviously, it's not a traditional interview like it would be for a first-time head coach, but he's still, like you said, he needs to come up with some sort of plan to present Arthur Blank. And obviously, there's some logistical things that have to be worked out, as you mentioned, Rich McKay, personnel decision-making, and all that. But the fact of the matter is what he formulated a well-constructed plan in just a couple of days to present to Arthur Blank. No, I have a hard time believing that. I know the guy's a genius. I know that he's a very, you know, meticulous head coach. He has everything down to a T, you know, dotting his I's, crossing his T's and everything like that. But I have a hard time believing that really any of these head coaches, while, you know, a lot of them are still coaching in the playoffs, can have any sort of plan jotted down that could, you know, convince me as an owner. But I did want to mention one thing, and I'll throw it back to you after this. An interesting thing in all this is Tom Pelissero, you know, very credible national reporter, came out after the interview was announced and basically said no deal is imminent, but there is mutual interest, which just aligns with everything everybody else has said. There's no doubt about that, especially now that the interview is official. But what is interesting is somebody on the Atlanta beat, D. Orlando Ledbetter, if you follow the Falcons or any Atlanta sports team, you know who D-Led is. He basically has a source familiar with the situation that basically said, Bill doesn't want to come to Atlanta. He just wants to coach. And if the Falcons are the only team that want him, that's where he's going to go. So it seems like the Falcons are kind of a last resort and not Belichick's first choice.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes sense. That aligns with what we've been saying this entire time. Like, it doesn't really make sense for the Falcons or Bill Belichick for him to come to a place where there's not a quarterback in place and there's still a lot of holes that need to be filled for him to contend for a championship in his window. His window is what? As we've said, at most 5 years, which it's probably closer to three. So, yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And then when you look around the league at some other potential openings, things that aren't even open yet, two come to mind. And I know we're going to talk about the Eagles job, but Nick Sirianni could very well be out of job. And the Cowboys very well could fire Mark McCarthy. And then there you go. You got two. Those make a lot more sense for Bill Belichick to me. Like, if you were going to say, name a team off cuff that would succeed with Bill Belichick over these next 3 years and have a good landing spot for him, the first one that comes to mind is the Philadelphia Eagles. And if they do fire Sirianni, which looks like a very possible thing, I think that's a great landing spot for him. You could say the same thing about the Dallas Cowboys with Dak Prescott and the talent that they have on both sides of the ball, particularly defensively. I mean, we saw what Dan Quinn was able to do. I don't think there's anybody that's saying Belichick couldn't even squeeze even more out of that talented Cowboys defense. So those make a lot more sense. I mean, I don't know if they're going to have interest, but if I'm the Cowboys and if I'm the Eagles, I would have a lot more interest in Bill Belichick than I would if Atlanta. Like, those matches just make a lot more sense from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense at all other than the fact that Arthur Blank is enamored with the aura of Bill Belichick, the guy that, you know, helped orchestrate a 25-point comeback in the Super Bowl, largest comeback in Super Bowl history. Blank got a, had a first-row seat at that, and now he's going to be the guy to bring him to Atlanta. It's a bit ironic, and it's kind of like it's laughable that you, as an owner, you're going to go do that, where this guy is in the twilight years of his career. And I see a ton of people defending the Falcons going after Bill Belichick because of his past accomplishments. Can we look towards the future even a little bit, or even the more recent history? I posted this excerpt from the Athletic on Twitter, and I'm going to read some of the stuff that Mac Jones had to go through in New England. And this is the guy that, you know, all these sports talk heads around Atlanta want to bring to the Falcons because of his past accomplishments with Tom Brady. No, listen to some of this. This is substantiated stuff from the Athletic, that coaching points were given to Jones, Mac Jones, were frequently too general. Quote, throw the deep ball regardless of the coverage, read, or even more simply, find an open player, rather than the nuanced explanations towards scheme and opposing defenses. In addition, Jones's input on how to improve the offense, obviously, most offensive coordinators will tailor their offense to what the quarterback does best. Not New England. He was met with rebuke. During games, there were situations when different coaches would call plays into Jones's headset. Does that sound like a well-oiled machine in New England? The guy had Matt Patricia, for goodness sake, calling offensive plays and trying to make an offense. Matt Patricia, this defensive coordinator who failed in Detroit. Yeah. I don't know why people are so enamored with Bill Belichick's past accomplishments. He's out of New England for a reason.
Yeah, well, and you could even take it a little further. I mean, the reality of the situation, the reason that Bill Belichick went back to his old buddy, Mac Patricia, to call the plays in New England is strictly because that he didn't trust anybody else, and he wanted to have his thumb on the offense. He was really – that whole situation was a ghost situation, and if anyone doesn't realize that, Bill Belichick, as you just said multiple different coaches were calling plays. Bill Belichick was helping call those plays. Like, Bill Belichick thought he all of a sudden knew what was good enough for Mac Jones and what was good for this offense, despite never being an offensive head coach. And listen, Bill Belichick is one of the GOATs, and I'm sure he did have his hands on some of the things that Tom Brady did and stuff like that. But let's call a spade a spade. He's not an offensive head coach. So the entire reason they went to Matt Patricia, a defensive guy, is so Belichick could be more involved in the offense. And that's facts. I know that for a fact. So, like you said, this whole situation is a lot worse. I mean, Joe Judge was his quarterback's coach, a special teams guy. Like, the whole thing that he did with Mac Jones was an embarrassment. It was an embarrassment.
An embarrassment. And it's certainly an asterisk on his resume. And I think that, you know, all these Falcons fans who are like, as long as he doesn't have personnel decision-making power, okay, I could get past that. But guess who's going to hire the staff? It's Bill Belichick. He's going to build his staff, and he has never once gone straight away from his inner sanctum. He is going to hire the same exact guys that were in New England. He never once went off, and it's going to be Patricia, Joe Judge, you know, the same cast that we saw in New England fail in New England and Atlanta. I don't see how we can praise Bill Belichick. It's like impossible for some fans to compartmentalize the fact that Bill Belichick, the GOAT, is not the same guy that he was. And Tom Brady had a lot to do with that success. We need a guy who is going to be here and kind of sink his teeth into the foundation of this franchise. We don't need a guy who's just going to come and try and change a bunch of things and get by with a veteran quarterback. That's not what this franchise needs. We have to be done with half-measure answers at the quarterback position. And if you hire Bill Belichick, that's what it's going to be again.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about those quarterbacks, because depending on who the Falcons hire, that's going to depend on who the next quarterback of the Falcons is. We now know the interest between the Falcons and Bill Belichick is legit, even though if you didn't believe everything that was being reported by every national media outlet and me as well. By the way, that's two for two. Don't ever doubt me. If I say something's happening, it's happening. Regardless, though, whoever the Falcons get as their next head coach is going to depend a lot. And this is the main reason why we're both probably against, and why most Falcons are against Bill Belichick being the next head coach in Atlanta. And it's because he's going to go in a very certain direction. He's not going to go after a rookie. Like we said, he's got 3, maybe 5 years left. He's going to want to get a veteran in the building that he knows, that he trusts, that will run his offense, that will run his style of game, that will work with Josh McDaniels or whoever he brings in. Like you just said in the last segment, Alex, nothing is going to change. They're going to get a guy that Bill Belichick trusts, because this whole thing that Belichick has right now, it's all centered around trust. That's why he hires the same guys. That's why he goes after certain players. That's why he goes after former players that have been cut by other teams. Like this is who he's been his entire career, and it's had a ton of success in different ways. But for the Falcons and what we're looking forward to, not exactly the best course of action, but that is what he's going to do if he's the next head coach in Atlanta.
Yeah, Matt Ryan, you know, said it best on I don't remember what show exactly it was. It was on some sort of some sort of CBS show. Matt Ryan was talking about the prospect of Bill Belichick coming to Atlanta, and he basically confirmed that. You know, he was like, Belichick's going to want a veteran. He's not going to want a rookie. He's not going to have to go through what he just went through with Mac Jones. And though I think most of the fault in New England deserves to be placed at the feet of Belichick and not Mac Jones. I mean, you saw what Mac Jones was his rookie year. So you could see that he has potential. He was just screwed. It's that simple. So there's no way that Bill Belichick goes through the same process with another rookie quarterback. Oh, and let's just play this scenario out that the Falcons do hire Bill Belichick and they do want to draft a rookie quarterback. It's not going to be Drake May or Caleb Williams because they're going 1-2. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the Bears are not trading the first overall pick. I'd be shocked if they did, at least. So that leaves the Falcons with this seemingly the third best quarterback in this class. And guess who that is? Jaden Daniels. You trust Bill Belichick's dinosaur butt to develop one of the most incredible dual threat quarterbacks in college football history and Jaden Daniels? No, you don't. He's going to ask Jaden Daniels to drop back and not use his legs because that's just who Bill Belichick is. That's the system he wants. No, that's not the reality. Reality is he's going to go after a guy like Kirk Cousins or Russell Wilson or some veteran that's going to be available that he can trust and who's going to run his offense, a la not Justin Fields, who is a dynamic runner as well. So I think that Falcons fans should, you know, prepare for Bill Belichick potentially coming to Atlanta and then them not getting the quarterback that they want. Whether it's, I think a lot of Falcons fans kind of prioritize, like, obviously Caleb Williams, Drake May, but not realistic. Realistic options. Jaden Daniels and Justin Fields are kind of right there in terms of most Falcons fans, at least on social media, how they feel. You better get it through your head that if Belichick comes here, those options are not even close to be on the table. Now, Chase, we go a different direction. Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, Mike McDonald, any other candidate other than a 72-year-old Bill Belichick. And I think, you know, a Jaden Daniels, a younger quarterback, Justin Fields is on the table again.
Yeah, I mean, for Jaden Daniels' sake, I don't want him in Atlanta, Bill Belichick. Yeah. Like, I don't want the same thing to happen to Mac Jones. So as a guy who loves Jaden Daniels, I almost don't wish that on him, even if I was his enemy. I mean, that would just be, and I agree with you on the Fields aspect, and I agree with you on the Mike McDonald. He may not be a offensive head coach, but he's 36 and he just came from a team that had Lamar Jackson. He knows, and trust me, those defensive coaches that play against Lamar Jackson and practice against Lamar Jackson, they know how those dynamic runners. So I agree. As long as they just don't get a dinosaur in here and Bill Belichick. But if let's say it is Bill Belichick, and you just mentioned some options and Kirk Cousins, I think that makes a ton of sense. But then again, Minnesota is probably going to make a hardcore run at keeping Kirk Cousins. I think that's the direction they go. Now he's off the table. You're really talking about one guy here, guys. And this is the whole thing. Ever since we started bringing up the Bill Belichick to the Falcons rumors, I made jokes like it was going to be 2015. We're getting McDaniels back and we're getting Russell Wilson. Like, but that is legitimately, like, I don't see really any other options. Like, what other options out there? I mean, Baker Mayfield, there's no way he's going to trust Baker Mayfield. So it's Russell Wilson. Well, I genuinely believe that is the case, that if Bill Belichick here, Russell Wilson would be the quarterback of the Falcons next season.
I think that's fair. Baker Mayfield's going to re-sign with Tampa. Why wouldn't they re-sign Baker Mayfield? He just won them a playoff game. He's won more playoff games and as many playoff games in Tampa as he won in Cleveland, as the Browns have won. So, you know, the Bucs would be fools not to re-sign Baker Mayfield to a very palatable deal. And I think that, you know, another option could be Jimmy Garoppolo. And I'm not saying I want this to happen. I'm just saying you're talking about Josh McDaniels, who wanted Jimmy Garoppolo in Vegas, is fired. Vegas has this new regime. They don't have a need for Jimmy G anymore. Bill Belichick, McDaniels, Jimmy G, the whole gang gets back together in Atlanta. I mean, this is just a nightmare scenario. I do want to paint one more image, a lighter note, that a guy like Anthony Weaver, who is the defensive line coach in Baltimore, the Falcons have already conducted an interview with him, that he's an assistant head coach in Baltimore, and it was said in his bio on the Ravens website, believe this for what it is, I don't know, that he had a hand in hiring Todd Monken. So if you're telling me that guy had the foresight that what was best for Lamar Jackson was Todd Monken, bring him aboard. He feels like the of the same vein of a guy who's going to get the most out of whatever quarterback is the best situation for the Falcons. Obviously, I want to go younger, Justin Fields, Jaden Daniels. And that's just the trend of the league, is these running quarterbacks. And we're trying to play early 2000s football Patriot way style. Like, we've got, you know, Tom Brady, Gronk, Aaron Hernandez, and these skilled little white slot receivers. Like, this is crazy. Looking at the composure, the complexion of this roster, it doesn't fit anything that the Patriots have ran up there in New England. Anything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can say it enough times. I mean, we've talked about Bill Belichick at least one segment on this show for the last 10 shows, and sometimes two or three like we're doing today. There is nothing about it that makes any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. The only reason I want to see it is because I think it could be a disaster. And that's kind of screwed up because we are Falcons fans. But there is something intriguing about me where I'm just like, you know what, Arthur? Go do it. Make this be your last hurrah, because I've already been pissed off at you for the last several years. I think you've made terrible decisions, like the one that you might be trying to make right now with Bill Belichick. You wanted to give us one last awful decision on your way out. Go do it. It's your team. You're the billionaire. You own it. You get to make the decisions. That's the only intriguing part, because it just sounds so dumb. So dumb.
It's an awkward fit. It's a wonky fit. And Arthur Blank very well could be doing it.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the playoff games that happened yesterday. You talked about Baker Mayfield. Let's discuss it. We had a Monday night doubleheader to wrap up Super Wild Card Weekend, and not both the favorites didn't win. The Eagles absolutely got smacked down, but I think we've talked about that several times. I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that if the Falcons had gotten into there, that they could have given the Eagles a good run for their money? I mean, what a disaster Philly turned in, and you could kind of see it even when they were 10-1. There were a lot of flaws, especially defensively, and then obviously I think Jalen Hurts had to be playing a little hurt, and then obviously A.J. Brown was not in for that game, but they had no answer for the blitz. They did not stick to their running game, which was their forte a year ago. And their defense at the second and third levels was just an absolute mess. Yes, they have a fantastic defensive line, but that second and third levels from the beginning of the season, the entire season, they couldn't tackle. It was on full display yesterday. Baker Mayfield picked them apart. Congrats to the Bucs, but what an embarrassing end of the season. And I think there could be some major changes in Philly. We've already heard Jason Kelce is retiring. And this was it just shows you the NFL, the parity in the NFL. I mean, this was an Eagles team that was dominant a year ago. Now it looks like not only did they get exited, it's the way they got bounced this year. I mean, are you even looking towards next year as this team being a playoff team? Maybe, but borderline.
I just want to take a victory lap. What did I say preseason about a Super Bowl hangover in Philly? When we were picking division winners, I picked the Cowboys, and I still stand by the Eagles are just they're in an old roster, and everybody was acting like Jalen Hurts was a top five quarterback, and I didn't buy it. A lot of the success was tied to the pieces around him, the offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen. He was gone. Well, I do want to defend Jalen Hurts for a second. Now everybody's talking about him as a bottom five quarterback, and the reality is he was never a top five, but he's not a bottom five quarterback. The fact is, like you said, he was playing hurt. His offensive coordinator, who's garnering head coaching opportunities, which is beyond me, he was playing in a system that was just very predictable. It was a terrible system. He didn't have A.J. Brown. I think that, you know, Jalen Hurts deserves some criticism, but acting like this guy isn't still a quarterback that half the league would have. I would love to have him in Atlanta. Like, you're crazy if you don't think that he could be better for this Falcons team than Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heinicke. You're absolutely crazy. With that being said, yeah, the writing was kind of on the wall. I mean, this Eagles team was this loss away from complete implosion. Like, it feels like Sirianni could be on his way out. It feels like they're going to blow it up. I mean, they got Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham. Those guys are all on their way out. They've got a whole – Julio Jones was on that team. I hope Falcons fans don't forget that. This was an old roster. They're going to have to get younger because now they've got some salary cap stuff that they've got to figure out. Good for Baker Mayfield and the Bucs. I know we're Falcons fans and the Bucs are in the division. Good for Baker Mayfield. I love seeing Baker Mayfield succeed. I think that he's hilarious. I'll tell you this right now, Falcons fans. A lot of people laughed at those who suggested Baker Mayfield could be a potential option for the Falcons this year. Look who's laughing now. Baker Mayfield would have led the Falcons to the divisional round this year. I guarantee it.
Yeah, without a doubt. And now he's not even going to be an option probably. As you said last segment, I mean, the Bucs would be foolish. Maybe they get a rookie or something. Maybe they go out there and get a Penix with wherever they're drafting, or Bo Nix or something like that. But Baker should definitely be the quarterback. On the other end, Bills take care of business. As we talked about yesterday, the potential matchup, this sets up a dream matchup. Mahomes going on the road to play Buffalo. There's been a lot of questions about Buffalo this entire season. If you go back 6-7 weeks ago, they had like a 5% chance of making the postseason, which I thought was wild because there's just too much talent. And when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, if they had gone, they only needed to go, 5-1 to make the playoffs. They ended up going 6-0. They've now won 7 in a row. When you're talking about Super Bowl favorites, I have a hard time putting anyone above Buffalo. Maybe San Fran, just because it's easier to go through the NFC than it is the AFC. You don't have two juggernauts to potentially face. You only have one. But at the, Buffalo's playing some of the best football. Josh Allen looks like a stud. He was unbelievable. That run that he had, 56 yards or whatever it was, he's Superman. He's literally Cam Newton that's a better passer. He's what everyone thought Cam Newton was when he was an MVP. I mean, he's like this every single year. And this Bills team looks like they're prime to give anybody hell. But then you got Mahomes on the other side, and it's just like, can this guy ever lose? He just wins every big game. I couldn't be more excited for that AFC wild card or divisional round.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be a fool to bet against Patrick Mahomes. It is his very first road postseason game. In his career, he's never played, obviously, the Super Bowl's a neutral site, but I'm talking before, you know, the wild card. He's undefeated in the wild card, divisional round, conference championships. He's only played in Kansas City. That's a wild stat in and of itself. Now he's going to Buffalo. The weather isn't going to be a factor in this one because both teams are very accustomed to playing in crazy weather, if that's the case. I don't know how you bet against Mahomes. I will say this, that Steelers defense was not the Steelers defense that many remember. Obviously, they were without T.J. Watt. This Chiefs defense is another thing entirely. It's setting up to be a showstopper. I'm so excited to watch that game. But I do think that you're crazy for thinking the 49ers are not head and shoulders the favorites to win this Super Bowl because of the thing you mentioned. There's nobody in the NFC. I mean, they're double-digit favorites over the Packers. The Lions are 6-point favorites over the Bucks or so. We expect the Lions to probably win that game. If they don't, the 49ers are going to be 13-point favorites over the Bucks, and they'll probably be touchdown favorites over the Lions. Whereas, you know, you're talking about the Bills, they're going to have to go through Kansas City, and then seemingly what everybody expects is they're going to have to go through a juggernaut in Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. So I think their path to a Super Bowl is so incredibly tough, and the 49ers are going to be touchdown favorites whoever they play in the NFC Championship game. So, I mean, they have a cakewalk to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking more about the other side of things, Baltimore possibly being right up there with the 49ers, the Bills, because like you said, the Bills are going to have to beat Patrick Mahomes and then most likely go on the road and beat Baltimore. But obviously we don't know. Don't count CJ Stroud out. I know you said you think they should blow him out of the water. And yes, they probably should. It's his first road playoff game against a much better team than they played in the Cleveland Browns. But I don't know. I'm done. There's guys in the league now that I'm done counting out. Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes being one of them. CJ Stroud is getting up there pretty fast.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a very fair assessment. CJ Stroud's a superstar. I don't want anyone to take this as if I'm counting out CJ Stroud. I just think that, you know, eventually rookies hit walls. And that's not to say that he can't overcome it eventually, but in his very first postseason, his postseason road debut, I have a hard time believing it. Mike McDonald's one of the best in the business. He's a Falcons head coaching candidate. He's one of the brightest defensive minds in the game. And not only that, the scheme matches the talent. Baltimore's defensive talent is second to none in these postseason, other than maybe the 49ers. I mean, it's going to be very hard for CJ Stroud in that Houston offense, who doesn't have all the weapons.
But I'll tell you what, though, if he does go in there and beat Baltimore as a rookie, that'll be one of the more impressive things we've seen in a very long time from a rookie quarterback. Coming up after the break, Chris Sale has some hilarious comments on foul territory about being the Braves' fourth starter. Chris Sale recently was on foul territory with his ex-teammate and ex-Atlanta Brave, AJ Pruszynski, and he had some funny comments talking about Chris Sale being the Braves' fourth starter and how the mighty have fallen, and Chris Sale's response, which I thought was great. Some people were like, whoa, dude, you're just going to come here and say, he said, hey, I can suck and nobody's going to care. Now, there is some truth to that. He doesn't have to be the ace of the Atlanta Braves staff, which is what we've talked about. He just has to come in here every 5 days, give 5 to 6 innings of his best stuff. Because we have all this talent, not just in the pitching staff and the depth of the pitching staff, but on the offensive side of things, you know, they're not going to push him. They're not going to ask him to pitch 200 innings or literally be the ace of this staff. So while, yes, he's just making a joke, it's very true in the fact that he can come in here and the Braves are going to take things easy on him. And when you're talking about a pitcher who's dealt with so many injuries since 2019, I think it's going to be very beneficial for all parties, Chris Sale and the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, there was immense pressure in Boston to be the guy. I mean, he got that fat contract after the World Series, and he was expected to kind of lead that staff. Injuries obviously derailed that idea. He comes to Atlanta, and it's all gravy. He's not going to be expected to be the 1-2 or even the third guy. And I think that, you know, I posted it on Twitter, and I looked at the comments under your profile, and it was crazy that Braves fans are this dense. Are you kidding me? He's obviously not being serious. He's there, like you said, there is some truth to the joke. Like all funny things, there is some truth in it. But he's not being serious at all. Obviously, the guy's going to be extremely focused and want to do his absolute best. Like Braves fans actually thought that he was being serious and he was just going to come here and say, ah, screw it. It doesn't really matter. I'm the fourth guy. The fact of the matter is it doesn't even really matter if it is true in the regular season. If he sucks in the regular season, it doesn't matter. We just saw what this Braves lineup can do with a hobbled pitching staff. They won 100-plus games. The only thing that matters, and I think that's the whole approach of Alex Anthopoulos' offseason, is how can I build this team to be better suited for October? And this Chris Sale acquisition and subsequent contract extension is the perfect example of that. It doesn't matter what Chris Sale gives the Braves in the regular season. It frankly doesn't. It matters what happens in the postseason. And that's all I'll judge this entire acquisition off. If Chris Sale comes out and gives the Braves good innings in the postseason in October, I don't care what he does in the regular season, even if he does suck.
Yeah, I think Atlanta fans can get easily offended. You know, he's coming from a place where Boston, where it's like, oh, obviously there's a ton of pressure, even if you are the fourth guy, and maybe they just thought, oh, you're just saying just because you're coming to Atlanta now, not a big baseball market, even though it is right up there with Boston, to be honest. This isn't like he's joining the Atlanta Falcons, but they can get easily they can get easily offended by stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, the reality is it's all about the postseason. And as I wrote when I commented on that, I said, don't be surprised if we're talking about Chris Sale up there in the same breath as Spencer Strider and Max Fried, because he is that talented. He is completely dedicated to his craft. He is a ultra competitor. So if there was anybody, just like, his personality doesn't even match. He would never actually say something like that. Like, he wants to win as much as anyone on this team. And that's another thing that he brings to this clubhouse and to this, you know, a thing that we talked about all offseason that might've been a little missing over the last two seasons.
Yeah, this guy has the personality to just kind of mail it in. That's what Braves fans kind of took these comments as. And maybe some of them didn't even click on the article. Granted, you know, I do that frequently. I just read a headline and think of something funny and I say it. So, you know, maybe they didn't read the whole thing or watch the whole video where AJ was poking fun at Chris Sale and Sale responded in kind. Like he was just keeping the jokes going. And I think that if you read anything after the acquisition about his past, his reputation, he's not the kind of guy to just kind of mail in it. Like if he struggles, he's going to put his head down and work and see how he can come out the other end.
No, he's an ultra competitor. And there was actually a story later in that video, and I'll talk about it briefly just to show you the kind of competitor that he is. I think Robin Venturi was the head coach when Chris Sale was a young buck over in Chicago. The first two games of the series, Derek Jeter hit two homers, leadoff homers. And so Robin Venturi in the pitching meeting with Chris Sale and AJ Preczynski was like, "We're throwing first pitch slider to Derek Jeter. First pitch slider. First pitch of the game, it's going to be a slider." And AJ Brzezinski's like, "Well, I'm not telling Chris that." And he's like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, Chris ain't going to do it. He's going to throw him fastball." He's like, he's like, "That's the softest thing I could do. I'm not throwing a slider." So his first pitch, Robin basically threatened him and said, "I'm taking you out if you don't throw a first pitch slider." You know what he did? He threw a first pitch slider in the other batter's box because he did not want to throw a first pitch slider. He wanted to throw a fastball. So if you want to talk about, like, this is from the same interview, the kind of competitor that this guy is, like, this is the young buck Chris Sale. And I guarantee you that's what the Braves are going to be getting. He's fearless. He wants to go attack bitters. You're talking about a guy who's one of the best strikeout pitchers in the history of the game. And he also doesn't walk anybody. He is not scared. He's fearless. He's an ultra competitor. And that's the kind of guy you're really getting. Not the guy who's joking around about being the fourth starter in Atlanta.
That's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. Coming up after the break, which offensive mind would you rather have as the Falcons head coach, Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowik, both in the playoffs? Two bright offensive minds are currently leading the Atlanta Falcons, or not the Atlanta Falcons, hopefully leading the Atlanta Falcons soon, currently leading their current teams in the playoffs, and Ben Johnson for the Lions and Bobby Slowik of the Texans. So I ask you, of these two bright offensive minds that both could be head coaches by this time, or, you know, in a few months now, which one would you rather have?
Yeah, I think that both are obviously everybody's looking for the next Kyle Shanahan, the next Sean McVay. And these two guys seem like the next one on that kind of ladder. Obviously, Bobby Slowik is directly from the Shanahan coaching tree. Was in Washington with the LaFleurs, with McVay's, with everybody. He's a part of that tree. So obviously, Bobby Slowik's probably a pretty good gamble because he's a direct descent of those Shanahan successful coaching trees. Now, how much of that is due to CJ Stroud? I don't know. It's worth asking. But in that same breath, there's not a lot of weapons out there in Houston. If you compare them to Atlanta, I mean, it's night and day in terms of the weapons. But then again, on that same conversation, Ben Johnson has a bunch of weapons in Detroit, and they're eerily similar to the ones in Atlanta. Sam LaPorta, tight end, Kyle Pitts, Amon-Ra St. Brown, wide receiver, Drake London, Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, David Montgomery, Tyler Algiers. The resemblance is uncanny. It is crazy. Can you take that away from Ben Johnson? And then Jared Goff and all of this. Ben Johnson really revived Jared Goff's career. Like, I think Ben Johnson could do that with several other guys. So I think there's tons of things to weigh in this. And I think the one thing that, like, sticks out to me so much is, CJ Stroud seems to be the difference in Houston. I do think Bobby Slowik can be a great coordinator and eventually a head coach, but I think CJ Stroud transcends scheme. It doesn't matter who his offensive coordinator is, it's going to work. It's kind of like Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning. It doesn't matter who it is, they're going to succeed. So I kind of lean towards Ben Johnson because he's doing it with a far less a less talented quarterback than Jared Goff, in my opinion. So I lean to Ben Johnson because how many CJ Strouds are falling off the tree nowadays?
Yeah. I think as we've talked about it a bunch, whoever the guy is, they're going to have to improve on quarterback or it's not going to matter. I mean, yeah, we can say Jared Goff's less talented. I don't know how much less talented. I think it's hard to tell with CJ.
I agree with you.
Like I'm team CJ Stroud, but we also do have to take into account that he is a rookie. We haven't seen him with another coordinator. how much really is it? Maybe Bobby Slowick is this offensive genius. And as we've seen with Kyle Shanahan, it really doesn't matter who's playing quarterback with him. Then you go back to the coaching tree, which I think is extremely important in this conversation. I mean, nobody on that coaching tree has failed. I mean, we're talking about the best offensive coaches in all of football, and probably three of the top five coaches, or at least three of the top 10 coaches in the game today, and maybe the top two in McVay and Shanahan over there out west. Like, this, the hit rate on these guys is like 100%.
It's crazy.
And as you mentioned, there aren't a lot of weapons, especially with Tank Dell going. I mean, you talk about when Tank Dell was healthy. I mean, you had Tank Dell and Nico Collins looking like two wide receiver ones in that offense. And I don't think anybody had those guys as wide receiver ones coming into the season. So I think I do agree with you. I think we both agree that CJ Stroud is a superstar, maybe already a top five quarterback in the game. And if that's the case, that's kind of a little bit of a knock on Slowick. But I do think there's a scenario where, yo, Bobby's very much involved in how good CJ's looked this year. And I'd be interested to see, because he's probably going to get a head coaching job. I think both these guys do. Interested to see how CJ Stroud, you know, is with another coordinator.
Yeah, I think it's fair to wonder. And I think that this conversation is so fun, because, like, it's like, who do you really prefer? Because they've two kind of different flavors of water, depending on what you like. And, you know, I find myself going back and forth. You know, if I had my dream guy, it'd be Jim Harbaugh, because he is an offensive mind, but he's also already a proven CEO-esque head coach, that he's very well experienced in managing a lot of different moving parts. Whereas Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, they could potentially prove to be that guy, like Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay have, and Matt LaFleur, but the jury is still out. But obviously, Jim Harbaugh pipe dream, I think that's just, it's not even a reality. Like, I think Arthur Blank calls Jim Harbaugh with that 404 number. Jim Harbaugh goes, yeah, no. I'm not even taking. Yeah.
You got Justin Herbert on your roster? No, I'm good. Desmond Ritter's your QB1 right now? Yeah, that's on you. That's on you. Not only did you screw this season, you screwed up your coaching search for next season. No, I mean, I agree, but I think Slowick and Ben Johnson, both intriguing candidates, both younger guys that you can give a few years. We talked about going younger. I mean, I don't even think I really have to say it, but we both think they're 10 times better options than Bill Belichick.
Well, just think about the scenarios that have to play out. If you go Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick, one of those two guys, you're going to go and draft a quarterback, seemingly Jaden Daniels. Imagine one of those guys with Jaden Daniels, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson. You go with Bill Belichick, they're going to bring in somebody like Russell Wilson. It's not hard. I really don't think it's a hard choice.
This really isn't rocket science, but we're making it seem like rocket science, because this is what the Atlanta Falcons do, guys. Like, yes, this is true. We talk about it time and time again, and I just hope this enamorment that they have with Bill Belichick passes, or maybe Bill Belichick gets the Eagles job or something like that, and it saves us, because that looks like the one thing that might save us. Someone else swoops in and says, hey, we want you, Bill.
The thing is Bill Belichick is an attractive head coaching candidate for anyone other than the Falcons. Like, it just doesn't make sense for us. Like, the Cowboys, they have a quarterback, they have a defense. Everything's ready for a new head coach to step in. Same thing with the Eagles. With the Falcons, our timelines are way off. Like, we don't even have a quarterback. Like, we need to first get a quarterback. Like, the timelines, it's a wonky fit. It's an awkward fit, like Matt Ryan said.
Yeah, I am with you 100%. Hopefully it is Bobby Slowick or Ben Johnson. At the very least, that would be extremely exciting with all these young offensive pieces. Coming up after the break, Trae Young, the most underrated point guard in the game, makes NBA history.
The most underrated point guard, maybe in NBA history, at least right now, he's the most underrated point guard in the NBA, and it's Trae Young. He constantly is held to a different standard than the rest of the league for whatever reason. Maybe it's because Atlanta sucks. Maybe it's because he's small. I don't know what it is, but he just made NBA history against the Spurs. He reached 10,000 points in that Spurs game. It made him the fastest player to reach 10,000 points, 3,500 assists, and 1,000 made three-pointers in NBA history. He did it in 390 games. You know who was the fastest before him? Oh, I don't know. Maybe one of the greatest players in NBA history, Steph Curry. He did it in 513 games. That's 120 fewer games, Chase. Trae Young is a superstar. He doesn't get enough credit. I hope we don't waste this superstar in Atlanta. I don't really trust Tony Ressler. I know you don't either. But Trae Young deserves all the praise in the world.
Yeah, there's a lot of things to complain about the Atlanta Hawks. And people that don't watch the Hawks or they're in the national media, their first thing to go to is, oh, Trae Young, he obviously can't lead a winner. Well, the reality of the situation is the roster is barren of talent outside of Trae Young. And DeJounte Murray is a wonky fit. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. It hasn't worked out. They took a gamble. I don't hate him for taking the gamble. I know Travis Schlenk didn't want it. It just hasn't worked out. It's a wonky fit. They're going to have to rebuild from the bottom up. And Trae Young, I still have confidence as long as he's on this roster because he really is an absolute superstar. He's the best player in Atlanta Hawks franchise history. He's better than Dominique Wilkins. I don't even think this is an argument. And they can win with him leading this team. They've just got to build a better team because most teams have two or three stars. The Hawks, they have one, and that's it. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We will be back with you on Wednesday.